views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. DTR News, and this is the first of a series of podcasts highlighting the 9th anniversary of the Black Talk Media Project, a U.S.-based nonprofit media education organization and service provider, and Black Talk Radio Network, a platform founded to provide a safe digital space for broadcasters and podcasters producing media for the global black community. Our first interview in this series is with Gus T. Renegade, who manages and produces the digital radio program and radio station, The Context of White Supremacy. Thank you for speaking with us today, Gus. I hope all is well considering the terroristic conditions black people face in the world today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Reed, for inviting me on the program. Glad to be a part of the project and just continuing to appreciate being on the Black Talk Radio Network platform, doing as best I can given the conditions that we have, and just looking forward to a great exchange today.
I as well. Now, I know you have been producing digital media as long, if not longer, than I have. I would like to know, when and how did you become involved in digital radio broadcasting?
Let's see. I believe myself, it was another black male. I'm in Washington State, Seattle specifically. Myself and another black male in 2007, we were spending a lot of time talking about exactly what Mr. Reed mentioned, the terrorism that is targeting black people worldwide. We were talking about that, talking about how to deal with what we call the system of racism, white supremacy, and just trying to solve some of our problems and get more information out to black people. We knew friends who were here in the Seattle area. They had radio programs, but they were not talk radio programs. They just played music and what have you. We thought, hey, maybe we could get a radio program and we could play a little music, but we could also use it to share information, to talk about racism, white supremacy, problems impacting black people. And we just started going from there. We were on the University of Washington's radio station about this time, about the autumn of 2007. We broadcasted there for about 2 months, and they threw us off the air. They said that we were radical and we only broadcasted one day a week for 2 hours. They said that we were radical and invented policies that we had violated, and just tossed us off the air, gave us no opportunity to rectify the situation, to continue programming. That stopped our effort for about a year and a half. And then about a year and a half, we came back. We started broadcasting online. We were on a different platform at the time, but we ran into some of the same issues where white people were controlling the platform and making it very, very difficult for black people to discuss the serious problem that is racism, white supremacy. And this was when a lot of other people were on platforms and they were just talking about nonsense, cursing, saying all kinds of silliness. We weren't doing any of that. We were just trying to be professional and to talk about a serious problem. And they threw us off the air again. And at that point, Mr. Reed, he had been encountering some of the same difficulties, having his broadcasting efforts sabotaged and blocked, unless I've been misinformed. And he said, hey, we have the Black Talk Radio Network platform. You can continue broadcasting here and hopefully avoid a lot of the troubles that we have been encountering. We've been on the platform. I've forgotten the total number of years at this point, but it is a long time, close to a decade, that we've been a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. It has helped a lot in avoiding some of those issues. And I'm just happy that we have this platform to be able to reach out, try to share our perspective and try to help solve some of our problems.
Now, my next set of questions actually delves into some of that, what you just mentioned. And so let's go a little bit deeper into it. I first became aware of the context of white supremacy on the platform Blog Talk Radio, where I started in 2007, the very year that that platform launched. And I have to say about the context of white supremacy, it was the first program I was aware of that delved deeply into the issue of racism, aka white supremacy. Now, also, as you just stated, I know that you had similar issues with management over at that platform that caused you to call them, in a blog post I came across, tacky, trashy, terroristic, and trifling, the four T's. With me, they took issue with me having a program called Black Talk Radio, which was a collaboration between myself and several other black radio hosts on that platform. And we came together to form this one program. And they actually, one of the, and his name is John Sweet. I haven't forgotten his name. And John Sweet, who is a manager, I don't know if he still is, at Blog Talk Radio, called me at my home to question my content and even took issue with the RBG colors of the first social media platform that we set up in 2008. What were some of the circumstances, that caused you to seek a new platform to broadcast from? I noticed in that blog post you mentioned they just terminated your agreement, similar to what happened to you at the college station with no explanation. Can you talk about some of the things that might we would label as tacky, trashy, terroristic, and trifling?
Wow. Painful memories, Mr. Reed.
I know.
I certainly can. This is 2011. I think at this point we had been on the Blog Talk Radio Network platform for about 2 years. And we were paying customers. I think at the time, I'm not sure how it's structured now, but they had you could use the free service or you could have a premium account and have a paid service. We had a premium account, paid service with them. And at that time, I think we had close to or well over 400 programs on their network. It's not like we had a small amount of content, but they contacted me. I hadn't had any issues with them. They had never contacted me, never said we violated any of their policies. Things were fine. Until about the early part of 2011, and I had a graphic image on our page, and it said, "The problem is white people." This is a direct quote from Robert Jensen, who is a white male professor at the University of Texas, Austin. He's written many books. He's been a guest on our program repeatedly. He had been a guest on our program at Blog Talk Radio Network. He had been a guest there twice, and he's been a guest on our program since we left their platform. But that's directly in his book, and it happens to be a statement that I think accurately, succinctly describes the nature of the problem and who is responsible for the problems black people are facing. But I had that as a graphic on the top of my page. It had only been up a few days, a short period of time, and they contacted me and said, "Oh my goodness, we've gotten complaints that, you know, this is upsetting a lot of people, and they think it's prejudice against white people, and it's just not going to be acceptable to have on the page." And so I spoke with them and I said, "You know, you all have a lot of people have Nazi swastikas up for their avatar and all kinds of things. What exactly is the nature of this? And, you know, what are the rules around what type of images someone can have on their page?" And they said, "Well, hey, we're not going to go back and forth. You can't have that image on your page, and you got to take it down if you're going to stay on our platform." I said, "No problem." I took it down, didn't, you know, try to be cute, take it down for a few seconds, put it back up. I removed it. They waited. This was on a phone conversation that we had where we went over all this. And they came back about, I think, within an hour and sent me an email and said, "You know, speaking of tacky and trashy," they came back within less than an hour and said, "You know what? We changed our mind. We don't want you on our platform at all. We're going to refund your money and kick you off of our server." And we had just had a conversation where we come to an agreement moving forward. changed their mind with no explanation. And I think within 30 days or so from that conversation, they scrubbed all of our archives, deleted all of our programming, links, everything, removed us from our page, and refunded me the price that we paid for our premium subscription to Blog Talk Radio Network.
Now, one of the things that we would experience from time to time when we were still on Blog Talk Radio was, and this would fall under terroristic, but we would have people who I would identify as white, although I couldn't see them. It wasn't like, you know, there was video or anything, but, you know, you could pretty much tell when you've lived in the United States by a person's voice, their tone, and what have you, or who you're dealing with. And we would have a lot of white people call in just to call us niggers and other, you know, trifling behavior like that. Did y'all experience anything like that while you were there?
Yes, sir. And I think particularly as it got closer to when they kicked us off of their platform, we had people call in to share racist jokes. Some of this is in the archives. People want to go back 2011, around the spring of 2011. People called in and told racist jokes, or same thing that you said, just to say some racist, nasty racist comments about black people. We have had that happen since leaving that platform, but certainly we experienced it while we were there as well.
Now, when I learned how to broadcast using software equipment and integrating this with the use of online-based conference systems, you were the first person to come to me for help in finding an alternative method to broadcasting other than the way it was being done on Blog Talk Radio, which is fairly easy. You can just call in with a telephone. With us, it's a little bit more involved. I do not use a Mac computer like you do, but I was able to point you in the right direction and what software to use, and you seem to be able to pick up the skill with relative ease. Was it easy for you to learn, and are you still doing things the same way after all these years?
I think it was relatively easy to learn. I will certainly confess, you know, I'm not a tech wizard. I'm not someone who went to school or just had a lot of time learning computers on my own and what have you, and learning a lot of technical aspects of running different programs, and certainly not broadcasting, because this is not something that I had an interest in up until around 2007. But when necessity required that I learn how to use some of this new technology if I wanted to continue broadcasting, Mr. Reed was there to help out. And the point that you made, the platform at Blog Talk Radio Network, it is very easy to use. Pretty much all you had to do was call in. That was it. It wasn't a whole lot, you know, of difficulty in terms of getting the recording or operating the broadcast. Operating on my own without that, being here at Black Talk Radio Network, it's slightly more involved, but I really can't say that it's difficult. I mean, there are so many tutorials. I think Mr. Reed has provided a lot of tutorials over the years to help folks get rolling. On YouTube, there are a plethora of different platforms and what have you. It's really not been that difficult. I certainly have had problems. I still experience problems from time to time just with different updates. Of course, you have to update the software and what have you. Things change. But it really hasn't been that difficult. And as in terms of has it changed in terms of the actual procedure that I use to broadcast? It's pretty similar. There are a few things that have changed just in terms of trying to improve the quality of the recording so that the audio sounds a little bit better on that. But for the most part, the actual procedure, the programs that I use and everything to broadcast using my Mac, it has not changed very much. I still wouldn't say it's very difficult. I'm pretty sure if I was a teenager right now, I'm sure I could learn it in 30 minutes, no problem. Because I'm a little bit older, it might take me a little bit longer to get the technique. But I think anybody, if you're interested in broadcasting and you want to be free from Blog Talk Radio Network, or you just want to be able to be independent and broadcast, I think you can do it. It would not take too much study.
Speaking, you mentioned the quality of the podcast, and this is not me trying to pump up, you know, the way that we do things, but one of the things, this is just a statement of fact, or I would say my opinion, but in your opinion, is the way that you produce your recordings, are they audibly better quality than what we were getting at Blog Talk?
Oh, absolutely. No question. That's just, as you said, that's just a statement of fact, and that's something that is self-evident. Anybody, you can listen to any of our audio content from 2009. That was when we were on the Blog Talk radio platform. You can listen to that content and then fast forward, pick any of our content, 2012, 2013. I'm not even saying pick stuff from right now. I'm saying you can pick things from 2014, 2013, and just do a comparison and see which audio you think sounds better. In fact, you can even pick some of the same guests. So that the only thing that's changed is the platform, where it'll be the same guest on the same phone line. Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., for example, he's been a guest on our program many times. You can hear some of his visits in 2009 on Blog Talk and see what the recording quality sounds like. And then fast forward, hear when he was on the program 2011, 2012, 2013. See what the audio quality sound like there. It's massive, massive upgrade, in my opinion.
You mentioned Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and I actually was going to bring him up in my next question. How did you develop the concept for the context of white supremacy? Because I suspected that Neely Fuller Jr., as well as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, who passed in 2016, were heavy influences on your content. Is that correct? Could you speak more about that, how you came up with the concept?
Absolutely. And you are correct. Mr. Fuller did have a huge impact in terms of the not just the program being labeled, titled The Context of White Supremacy, but in terms of a lot of the views that I have. Dr. Welsing, the late Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, passed, as you said, 2016. She also had a huge impact both on the title and on a lot of the views that I have on racism, white supremacy, and how the broadcast operates. And even I can say we do have a book club on the cows. Neil Postman's Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk that we're going to finish up this Friday also had a big impact on just the title of the program being Context. The reason for that, I concluded, many people, they insist, they take the position that white people are unaware or not conscious of racism. I've concluded the total opposite. I've concluded that white people are not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. White people cannot be ignorant about racism, white supremacy, or they will get in trouble with other white people. Black people, non-white people, are the ones who do not understand what racism is, how it works. And the term context specifically, I think for folks, if you're not familiar with the word, just the environment, the situation, all of the circumstances and variables that are happening when an event takes place, that has a huge impact in terms of helping you be able to make sense of what is happening, why these things are happening. And just any illustration that people want to use, if they want to take the situation that happened at the University of Hartford last week, I think that got a lot of attention with the black female student who was being terrorized by her white roommate. With all of that, why does a situation like this happen? Why does this black victim in the case say that, hey, I felt like the university, they were kind of chastising me and telling me not to talk about this. And if this situation had been reversed, if it had been a white female student being terrorized, having their toothbrush rammed in the rectum of another student and having their personal property violated, I think the university would have responded differently in how they dealt with this situation. Why do you keep having these type of situations happen? I have concluded it's because we're in the context of a system of white supremacy. And I think Mr. Fuller has devoted the past half century to writing and talking and trying to explain that context. He's written several books. I think most well-known, The Code Book, which has been revised, where he gives definitions for the term racism, white supremacy, and even has a page where he talks about the importance of context in terms of understanding why these things are happening so that we can make sense of what is happening on the planet. Dr. Welsing did as well. And in fact, I think if you read Mr. Fuller's work, if you read Dr. Welsing's work or hear them give any lectures, you will probably hear them say the exact total phrase, context of white supremacy, at some point, just reminding people We keep having these problems. Black people keep having these issues that we have to deal with because of the context system of white supremacy.
I would consider you, Gus, to be one of the hardest working digital radio producers and podcasters that I know. How do you find the time to produce as much content as you do?
I just try to be as active as possible. We started the broadcast when we returned to the air in 2009 on Blog Talk Radio Network. I put it in the description. This is not, you know, news or anything. I didn't have a phone and I didn't have a computer. And I was just, I had no goal of saying I want to broadcast for the next 8, 9, 10 years. That was not a goal. It was, let's just see if we can do a program. And after we did that one, let's just see if we can do another program. That was pretty much how things started. And with the conclusion that I have that white people are not going to stop practicing racism, white supremacy, that black people, we're going to have to solve this problem if we want an end to racism. And that's going to mean doing as much as we possibly can, really making this a priority and just trying to use our time and energy as much as we can towards solving this problem so it doesn't keep dragging on and on and on, generation and generation after black people suffering from this. So I really try to keep that as my motivation to be active. I look out and I see other people producing content on a regular basis. Democracy Now, they come on 5 days a week. 60 Minutes, they come on every week. You got lots of other news broadcasts. The New York Times, they come out every day. Washington Post, every day. And these are, in my view, these are mediums that often are supporting racism, white supremacy, if not always. So if they're constantly active and pushing out content and or restricting content. I know I think a lot of us have seen where, hey, the LA Times are where we happen to live at. We live in North Carolina and you check the Charlotte Observer. Hey, I don't, you know, appreciate the way that they covered this particular incident on Jonathan Farrell or whatever the other situation happens to be. I don't think that they covered this accurately. I don't think they did a good job in really making sure to pinpoint and illustrate how racism, white supremacy influenced what happened to Jonathan Farrell, who was shot and killed in North Carolina. That's what motivates me to try to just produce as much content as I possibly can. None of us has an infinite amount of time, so I now have a computer. I now have a much easier ability to broadcast, so I just try to stay as active as I possibly can, doing as much as I can and hoping that it's contributing to solve this problem.
You mentioned the mainstream, what they call the mainstream media, a couple of those news broadcasts. And I know that you share a lot of news from different sources on whatever stories you're reporting on or how that ties into the issue of racism and white supremacy. Now, when you first started, can you say that after time, after all these years have passed, that you're more easily able to spot intentional confusion in those coming from those type of platforms about the issue of race than you could when you first started?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have no problem confessing. I am a victim of white supremacy. Before, I was very serious about racism, studying racism, and paying attention to the news on a regular basis. I did not check the newspaper. I didn't listen to the news. I didn't watch the news. I made no effort to be like on a local level, national level, global level. Like I did not, I said before, I live in Seattle. I did not get up and check the Seattle Times on a regular basis, right? I did not do any of that. As I became more serious about racism, I said, wait a minute, they are directly, indirectly talking about racism, white supremacy in the news all the time. You just have to, as Mr. Reed said, you get better at being able to look at it, to study and figure out exactly what is being said or what is being omitted when they talk about these different reports in the news. Now, as I make an effort every day, that's one of the first things I do. Get up. What did I do? I got up this morning. I go see. Let's see what's in the New York Times. What are they talking about? What are they talking about on Democracy Now? And just, I guess, to give an example, Democracy Now, that's a program I watch pretty much every day. they did a segment on black identity extremists. I know that's something we've been talking about many folks on the Black Talk Radio Network platform. FBI's report where they identifying black people as maybe some black people might be willing to use violence and attack enforcement officers because they're upset about what's been happening to black people. Okay, Democracy Now, they are considered liberal, quote-unquote, or left-leaning. This is a platform that's allegedly sympathetic to black people or issues dealing with racism. They talk about racism a lot there. They did a segment on the black identity extremists when this was first reported a few weeks back. They covered it for 60 seconds. Now, for people, if you watch Democracy Now! On a regular basis, they will give short snippets about certain topics, but then they will devote sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes, sometimes a half hour, sometimes the whole 1 hour program if it's a really important topic. Black identity extremists, the first time they covered it, it got 60 seconds.
Wow.
That's the sort of thing that I look at and say, now, see, why is it that black people are only worth 60 seconds for something that I view as monumentally important? Now, eventually they did do a larger segment, but that was way down the road. That was a significant amount of time later, and it wasn't current when all of this was originally released. Just little things that I pay attention to. When they talked about Devin Kelly, the suspected shooter in Texas that just happened over the weekend, they have reported that in the New York Times that when he was 18, he dated a 13-year-old. That's the word they used, dated. I thought that was rape. Maybe I'm confused. Maybe I'm ignorant. Maybe there are lots of 18-year-olds who date 13-year-olds. That's the word that they used, though. That, and I think just if you pay more attention to the news, reading it, watching it, listening, you will see those patterns all the time. And that, in my view, racism, white supremacy. Could you imagine a black person, if a black person looked like Lil Wayne, was accused of going and doing a church shooting, killing 26 people, and then it was reported that at 18 he was dating a 13-year-old? Do you think they would use the same language? I don't think so. I could be in error.
I don't think so either. Let me ask you this, Gus. How important do you think media operations, and that's, you know, all the newspapers, what we see on television and even on the internet, how important do you think media is to the global operations of racism and white supremacy?
I think it is astronomically important, cannot be understated. They say knowledge is power. Now, I know a lot of people take the position that what you read in the Washington Post or the New York Times, whatever it happens to be, Wall Street Journal, whichever publication you check out or watch, listen to, that they lie. They're not telling the truth. I don't dispute that. However, even if they are promoting falsehoods, they can be huge. I think when they said weapons of mass destruction, you promote even promoting something that is false, that can have a huge impact in terms of what happens. So I think it is enormous. I do not think it is an accident. I don't think it's a coincidence. Reports that come out, things that you see being talked about in the news and how that shapes what people are focused on. Even if you don't read all of the reports or even if you don't sit down and listen to every single thing that they talk about, if you're watching the news on television or if you're listening to it, just these are the things that we deem to be important. The Russia hacking allegations, or whatever Trump tweeted today, or the shooting down in Texas. These are the things that we deem to be important for today, Tuesday, November 7th. These are the things that we do not deem to be important. That has a huge impact just in terms of what, how people prioritize their lives, what they think is important. It has just an astronomical impact in so many different ways. And plus, there's so many people, so many things happening on the planet, just the omission factor in terms of what things don't get attention, what things we say, hey, this is something that does not need to be discussed, or it doesn't need to be discussed in detail. This is something that you should be thinking about. This is something that you should be maybe thinking about even investing in, how you use your money, how you use your time and energy. It's huge, and controlling that narrative. I think on the program I try to emphasize a lot the importance of black journalists, That is astronomically important. Minister Malcolm X emphasized that in having black people that are able to participate in that narrative, black people able to participate in deciding what is important, what we should be focused on, what we should be paying attention to, and how we should understand, how we should process events that are taking place so that we can make sense of things within a proper context. I think it's astronomically important, cannot be understated.
I know over the years you have produced regular segments, which, again, come on weekly, focusing on specific topics. Like one of my favorites is workplace racism. Also, you mentioned earlier the book study sessions, which come on Friday nights. There is a segment specifically focusing on people outside of the United States and the racism they face. I think you call that Global Talk Sunday. And then there is the Saturday night compensatory call-in. Do you have a favorite? What I mean is, if a person could only listen to one segment a week, which would you recommend and why? As I stated, for me, it's workplace racism. The reason why is because the ability to bring in income to support your family is, I think, is priority number one, or should be priority number one. And often racism prevents us from being able to do that. So if you could only recommend one, which one would it be and why?
Wow. I might have to agree with Mr. Reed. We've only been doing workplace racism. I think that's our newest specific segment where we're just focused on one topic on a weekly basis. We've only been doing workplace racism since last summer. So it's a little over as an individual segment. Workplace racism used to be the end of our compensatory call-in, which is every Saturday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We used to make that the last portion of that broadcast. But as you just stated, I think employment, that is one of, if not the most important aspect in terms of how white people practice racism, white supremacy, and just problems that black people experience, non-white people experience worldwide, things that happen on the job. I know black people that are self-employed. They still have problems with racism, white supremacy from vendors, clients. You might, even if you're self-employed, you might have to employ a white person from time to time, even on a temporary basis. It still ends up being a problem. And certainly for black people, if you work directly with, around, for whites, it is a constant problem in a myriad of ways in terms of black people not getting promotions, black people not getting raises, black people not getting employed at all sometimes, whatever excuse they make up. We're not hiring, or you got a record. Our slave catchers out there, they caught you with, you know, a little bit of cannabis on you not that long ago. So, yeah, we can't hire, you know, dope fiends in this company. Whatever excuse they come up with, or if you get the job and you get harassed and written up unjustly, these sort of things are happening to black people on a global basis. And I have to even take a moment, the global aspect of racism, white supremacy, that's something I emphasize constantly. I think you referenced we have a monthly global Sunday talk on racism where we have international participants from all over. We have black people in Austria, the United Kingdom, the continent, lots of different locations where they have participated with us live to share their views on racism, white supremacy, and what their experience all the way on the other side of the planet. Even on workplace racism, which comes on Thursdays, every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we have a black female caller in London. Now, that's an 8-hour time difference from where I am between here and London. She will be on the line, see if I can get my first grade math correct. She will be on the line at 1 in the morning, her time, live. And I mean, for weeks, if you listen to any of the archives, you will hear her, Stacey in the London, and she will be up. That program stays on from 5 to 8 every Thursday. She will be on participating, and I timestamp it for that reason. 2:30 in the morning. This is Friday morning. She is still with us listening and commenting about what's happening to her on the job, and so many times what she's experiencing all the way on the other side of the world is exactly like what is happening to black people here, whether they're in Florida, Texas, Alaska, Louisiana. It's the same types of things. So just for a myriad of reasons, when I think I mentioned before, I think a lot of times black people, we don't understand racism. We don't understand what it means to be white. When you hear workplace situations that are happening all over the world from different people, different situations, and you hear the same types of things happening, that to me reveals so much. I think the workplace racism program is important for so many reasons. That's one where people have reported that they got suggestions that helped them deal with problems on the job, where they were being accused of something falsely or were just having problems with other coworkers. We've had people who said that they got some quality suggestions. So that would be the one that I think is important. I guess if folks were looking for one to check out, I would say workplace racism. I think it's important. And that is a program, if it's a black person listening, I don't know what type of listeners are we tuning into this segment, but for me, it's very hard to meet a black person who's not experiencing workplace racism problems. Maybe they don't call it racism. Maybe you don't even think of it as racism. But I don't know too many black people who truthfully can say, oh, yeah, I get all my raises on time. Every promotion, knock it out of the park. Every performance review, knock it out of the park. Highest rating you can get. I got that big corner office. I put my feet up on the desk. I go in, I do my work, and I'm just doing my job waiting to retire. If that's you, phenomenal. And you should still participate in workplace racism, because we would like tips on how you were able to do that. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been my experience. I talk to a lot of black people on the air and off the air who are struggling with problems on the job. Our workplace racism broadcast is designed to help neutralize those problems.
Now, you did mention that people give recommendations, so it's not where people are just calling in and complaining about what Mr. Charlie did to me on the job today. You know, they are actually, people are contributing suggestions and recommendations on how to combat those problems. And the one that I think most important that I have heard, not only on the program, I've heard from Mr. Fuller has said this about on the job racism, but something that I also experienced years before I even got into digital radio or even knew that it existed. And that is documenting what happens on the job. So that is, again, one of the reasons why that's one of my favorite programs, is because it does help people or give people suggestions that other people have said has actually helped them in these situations. So any other recommendations that stood out to you of things that work?
By the documenting, I'd highlight boldface print. Documenting is huge, and that can be written. There's so much technology now. We were talking about that earlier. I mean, I'm certainly not encouraging you to get an iPhone 10, but if you got one, they have got all kinds of nifty options where you can record. We encourage that, people practicing, because so many times people make comments, right? We deal with that a lot, people making racist jokes at work or just being rude, vulgar, and how they're not using proper workplace decorum and how they're behaving on the job. Well, you can record some of this stuff. That way you have documented evidence. It's not he said, she said. Certainly you can check what the recording laws are in your area. And I've also encouraged just writing things down. If someone makes a racist joke on the job, you can just stop. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to curse them out. Just grab your notebook. That still works. Grab your pen. Oh, you said, oh, okay, black people. And say that again, John. Just want to make sure I get the whole thing. That can work beautifully in stopping that problem. And you didn't have to get up and curse anybody out, and you won't get in trouble. That's another thing we try to emphasize, solving problems on the job without creating new problems. Another one that I would recommend, and really the one that it should be the first thing that I say, the importance of keeping your cool. You can listen to workplace racism or any other suggestions folks have on, you know, what to do on the job, but if you're not able to keep your cool, meaning you don't fly off the handle, you don't get emotional, respond emotionally when something happens on the job, if you're not able to remember that one, none of the other counter-racist suggestions matter. And I really try to emphasize that, because I think so frequently job situations, racists, they will do things to try to provoke us. They will say something nasty, say something rude. We've had black people who've called in within the past few months who said they were on a job where a white person called them a nigger. Shouldn't be surprised about that. Shouldn't be stunned about that. It's my view, what they want in a lot of those situations, for us to get angry. We yell back at them, curse. Sometimes these things even, you know, devolve into to physical brawls and what have you. And the black person invariably, they end up having some problems, whether they get fired or, oh, you retaliated, we can't have that, and maybe he shouldn't have called you a nigger, but we can't have, you know, fighting here, and so we're just going to have to let both of you go. I've seen that happen a lot, where the black person ends up with problems, major problems. Keeping your cool, not being surprised about those sort of things happening. I knew this was going to happen, and I already had in mind what I would do. Called a nigger, racist joke. I mean, you just go down. And again, it's, I'm not stunned. I didn't come here thinking that these white people were my friends. I didn't come here thinking that we're a big family and I'm going to hang out at their house for upcoming Thanksgiving and I'm already got them on my Christmas list. No, I am here with the understanding that I'm probably around some racists who are going to do something racist eventually. If not to me, someone else who works here, I'm not going to fly off the handle. I'm not going to curse them out. I'm going to plot and make a strategic move that is going to be to my benefit in resolving this situation. Keeping your cool should be one of the first things that I say for every workplace racism broadcast.
Over the years since we launched in 2008, Black Talk Radio Network has changed the platform, and you have been one of the few persons to be there for each and every change. I hope it has been for the better, but what are your thoughts about the changes you have seen over the years and any suggestions that you might give us?
I will have to think. Suggestion, just talking about that, I have to put that on the back burner and think of suggestions. But absolutely, I've been here, as I said, it's been closing in on a decade, I reckon, at this point. And I've seen the site grow and different even adjustments from this past week and changing it up so we could add videos with the descriptions on the page and what have you. I think it has been tremendous in terms of adding, getting more people, getting more traffic to the site, making it easier to use. I think making it more user friendly. I think people have reported they have an easier time accessing the page. In fact, I remember we simulcasted when we were kicked off of Blog Talk Radio Network. We would simulcast. We broadcast at Black Talk Radio Network and TalkShoe, and people reported they had more problems at TalkShoe than listening here at Black Talk Radio Network. So I think it's just Mr. Reed and his staff. I think they've done a lot to help grow the site and to make it easier for the hosts like myself to use the site. He's provided more tutorial videos. I think that was something that they didn't have at first, but specific tutorial videos that have been helpful for me. I've used some to broadcast and figure out if I was having any issues to help troubleshoot with things. So I think it's been grand in terms of the upgrades, what I've seen with the development of the site. And I will have to think about that. I'll give it some thought throughout the day in terms of suggestions, things that can help us continue to build and move forward.
Well, make sure if you come up with any to get back to me on that. Well, this month is, as I've stated, our 9th anniversary month as we head into our 10th year as a media organization and platform, and we are fundraising for the upcoming year. Do you think it is important that people support the organization financially the best they can, and why should they?
Absolutely. I think people should support. I guess I have self-serving interests since I am a host here as well, and I do appreciate having a platform to broadcast the context of white supremacy. But just Mr. Reed has experienced difficulties in being on other people's platforms, having to deal with suspected racists sabotaging your efforts, and they don't like the colors that you've chosen for your network, and they don't like the terms that you're using to put out your message. Unless, you know, we when I say we, black people, victims of white supremacy, unless we want to continue to deal with that sort of thing, not sure if I'm going to be able to tune in and listen to Mr. Reed, Black Talk Radio Network, not sure. Maybe they kicked him off the platform today. Not sure if I'm going to be able to access context of white supremacy because maybe they kicked him off the platform. I think it's hugely important. Going back to priorities, where do we put our priorities at? Are our priorities getting new iPhone 10, priorities supporting independent black media, making an effort to solve some of our problems and accurately, directly address the system of racism, white supremacy. I think there's a long history of black people taking this mission on and supporting. If you look back at the history of black journalists, the Black Panthers, they had a news publication. You got The Final Call right now. Before that, you had Muhammad Speaks. Black journalism has played such a critical role. Even if you look back through the civil rights era, black journalists were doing a lot of the work, talking about different situations that were happening all over the country and around the world. That has to be supported by black people. White people are not interested in seeing Black Talk Radio Network become a media mogul and challenging these other platforms in terms of disseminating information. They do not want to see that. So if that's something that we want to see happen, black people are going to have to put our priorities, our time, energy, finances up front to make that happen.
Thank you for speaking with me today, Gus, and I hope you are with us as we go into our 10th year of existence. And I wish the program, The Context of White Supremacy, continued success in the education of black people about the serious issue of racism, white supremacy.
Thank you for having me on, Mr. Reed. I hope I've, shared a few thoughts worthy of folks' time and energy who listen. Thank you, Mr. Reed, for all of the hard work that you do in keeping the platform up. I just appreciate having a reliable spot. We don't have problems where we go on and the site is not working or this is not functioning correctly. I just appreciate all of the hard work keeping us updated, what you're doing to change and improve the site. I hope that the fundraiser is phenomenal, that you're able to double your goal for what you're hoping to secure. Just continued success with the platform.
Thank you. This is Scotty Reed for BTR News signing out. For more independent black media, visit us online at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And for affordable media services, visit our U.S.-based nonprofit organization at blacktalkmediaproject.org. Hello, this is Scotty Reed, and thank you for listening to this podcast and sharing it with others. Please consider making a donation to the U.S.-based nonprofit media organization, Black Talk Media Project, in support of its efforts to elevate independent black voices. You can also support the work by joining the network's social media community, BTR Community, for just $24 a year. Black Talk Media Project is leading the way in the production of grassroots black media.